Nate Taylor from The Athletic. What's going on, Nate? Good to have you back in studio, man. Fresh off a little trip to the ATL.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about good eating.
How was T.I.?
Oh, T.I. was fun. He toned it down for the audience, which I
have to.
Which I appreciated. He did. He came out. You saw his entire face, which I thought was hilarious. And then he brought a little kid on stage to. I don't know if that was. It's not his daughter, is it?
I don't know.
But he brought out the little girl who did the chorus for "Live Your Life." I mean, just excellent. There were a decent amount of people in the stands, but it wasn't a true sellout. I don't think it was a sellout crowd.
Really?
No, there were still
what?
Even in the second quarter.
Their biggest game they said in the building's history, they didn't sell it out?
You can't have the biggest game. What?
There's just way too many teams doing loser stuff this year. Loser stuff.
You cannot have your biggest game in our new stadium, which is not really new, in week 3, guys. It can't. There was a game, I think, a couple years ago where they played the Panthers, and that game was essentially a playoff game late in the season, and I think DJ Moore went off, and I don't know if they – I can't remember if they won that game or not. Younghoe Koo was probably involved in the last minute. But I'm like, wasn't that game, for the actual, division or play –
Sounds right.
In the playoff hunt? So I'm like, that can't be your most important game of the stadium's history, while Arthur Brank is like, why don't I
induct myself.
Put myself in the ring of honor.
I would watch a 30 for 30 on who suggested it first or what that conversation was like. I mean, that'd be the same as if, look, we got this blank wall because we changed stations.
Right.
If Speck's new suggestion for this wall was, I'd like to start a 96.5 The Fan /610 Hall of Fame, and I'd like to nominate myself, Steven Spector, to be the first person to go up on the wall. You'd be like, I mean, we could have gone with Kling or something. I don't know why you had to touch her. There's a couple of guys who used to work here who were on national television, but okay.
Yeah, right.
I guess Speck it is.
Why did it take so long for Arthur Blank to get in, though? That's what's weird. What took so long, Arthur?
The best part is, everybody in the boardroom was like, Yeah, sure.
Yeah, who's going to be the person? You know what? I'm not sure, actually, if this is the year for you.
But then somebody in the back was like, we're going to do Matt Ryan, right? Matt Ryan, too, at some point. Okay, cool. It won't just be you, Arthur. At some point, we'll add the actual guy that helped us get to the Super Bowl. T.I. was fun. T.I. was a lot of fun. It reminded me of the AFC Championship game when they brought out T-Pain at halftime or whatever. And I was just like, I mean, tough gig, T-Pain. Because if you remember, the Ravens were down 17-7 to the Chiefs with the Super Bowl on the line. And my man was like, everybody on your feet. Everybody was like,
not right now, T-Pain.
I don't know, man. We don't look good out here.
How does that, by the way, how does that stadium compare to, you've been to SoFi, you've been to Allegiant?
It's really nice. Oh, it's really nice. Now what I was told was, I mean, it was pretty loud in there. So I will give Falcon fans credit. A lot of Chiefs fans obviously made the trip. So it was a very good atmosphere for a regular season game in September. But what I was told and what I wish I can see or could see at some point is when they get Georgia in that building.
Really?
It'll be fun.
Plus the roof was open, right? The little ocular thing or whatever they want to call it.
Which, Clark Hunt, take notes. It's pretty. It's really nice.
You know what's weird? Watching games, though, so that's a cool design, but the one that I think looks the best when just because of the lighting is Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to mimic.
Sure.
Because in an afternoon game, it's bright in there, and it looks
perfect.
Outdoors,
yeah,
and it's great.
Yeah. And it's a little bit bigger than the open space that is available in Atlanta. So to your point, I totally agree. Whether you do that, whether it's more of a traditional retractable roof, which is more Indianapolis, Houston, fine. But it's really pretty, and I was just told by several people that, hey, as long as Georgia's this good and they're going to be playing in that whatever Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl nonsense, they're going to destroy people in that stadium. So that's what I heard was the best part, but it's really nice. It's easy to get in and out of, too, which is something I've started to think about more and more as I travel to NFL games in the anticipation of the Chiefs trying to figure out their own decision, how they're going to do with whatever the new building is, whether it's in Missouri or Kansas, because again, I'm of the belief that Arrowhead's time is ticking. I don't think it's going to last beyond 2030, which is when the lease ends with the Truman Sports Complex. So it's easy to get in and out of. I don't feel like it was cluttered at all. And yeah, I, you know, talking to some people who were on the flight back that I had yesterday, had a good experience. So again, you know, Clark Hunt, take notes. Mark Donovan, who was in the press box for Sunday's game. Yeah. Hey man, you see that up there?
Looks cool.
And like the scoreboard is like,
yeah, the whole wraparound.
Yeah, the wraparound. I was like, hey man, this looks nice. And by the way, unlike Arrowhead, which I don't know why they don't do this. I know some fans have come to me and asked, and I just don't have the answer. The Falcons will replay any play for you, even though it's not in their favor. It's like, oh, wait, man, did you see that Patrick Mahomes throw? And it's like, wow, it's really in like 4K up there, and it's bright and big and like really cool. So like, even if you miss something, you can always see it basically before the next play starts. So I think Atlanta, from a production value, did a really nice job, and they got to have T-Pain in the building,
which is obviously cool. When you look at what, like from the team on the field perspective,
excuse me, not T-Pain. Dang it.
Well, we were talking about T-Pain. When we're talking about the team on the field, I think we can get to like tackle and running back and all that. But we're having the conversation. Patrick Mahomes is bottom five in the league in attempts over 20 yards, bottom five in the league in completions over 20 yards. I don't know how much time we spent this offseason saying the high-flying offense, it's coming back.
Yep.
Is he not used to throwing it deep anymore? Is he out of rhythm? Is Nagy making it more concerned? Is Andy, like, what is the single biggest reason why this team, once again, does not have a deep passing game?
You want me to give my honest opinion?
Yeah.
Always, Nate. Always.
Okay, kids. Every now and then I have the idea of, you know, reminding people of what happened in the past and why things are not going well now. And it mostly is upon 15's responsibility. So look, there are some routes where they are having people run past the sticks, 18 to 20 yards, hell, even 25 yards. Patrick either doesn't see it, or as we saw Sunday night against the Falcons, he's too sped up to process things correctly. And then my biggest, not necessarily criticism, but my biggest want moving forward is, if you know your offensive line is not as good as you were led to believe, and you know you don't have Isaiah Pacheco anymore for at least the next 7 games, and you know you don't have Hollywood Brown for most of the season, hell, if everything goes perfectly, he might come back in mid-December, as I told you guys. Hey, man, it's this thing called your legs and this thing called creation mode, and it's getting out of the pocket and doing the things that helped you be successful earlier in your career. So it is noticeable to me that the one time he did choose to scramble, choose to pump fake, choose to get the defense to sort of react to him, Justin Watson is wide open.
That was a great play.
On the corner.
3 pump fakes.
For, what, an 18-yard gain or whatever? I can look it up here in a minute.
Yeah.
That's the only play he did that. Now, there's a couple times where I think correctly he noticed that there was man coverage so he could scramble out of the pocket for a first down or move up the field. I think he's being too reliant on staying in the pocket, or I'm so sped up because I'm not totally sure I'm going to be protected because, like, Carson Steele's a rookie and he's never done this before.
Or like a whole year of maybe like dinking and dunking and you just kind of stop thinking about the deep pass.
Well, or your timing's just off. I think he's so sped. It's so weird. Like the first play of the game, Rashee Rice is wide open. It's a design schematic, brilliant play call from Andy Reid, Matt Nagy. As Patrick says, like his footwork is terrible on the pass. And so he one hops it basically to Rashee Rice, where that should be a 30-yard gain if completed, if accurately on time. So you're like, okay, well, he sped it up. He didn't go through his normal rhythm coming out of the play action. Okay, fine. Later on in the drive, even though they've moved the ball as efficiently as you would want with the too high shell coverage look, man, here we go. Another design play where Xavier Worthy is wide open and he waits. He takes longer than he should.
Although Andy said that was protection ball. And the protection wasn't good there. I don't think that's the full excuse, but the protection did fail a little.
A little, but the ball should be, I think if Patrick looks at it, he'll probably realize that the ball should be out sooner.
Should have been out already.
Or the throw should be a lot further to his right, which lets Worthy run under it versus throwing it more towards the actual post, which is probably where the play is actually designed, but it lets my cues back into the play And instead of a touchdown, Xavier Worthy does a really good job, honestly, of just being the defensive back at that point, knowing that Mike Hughes undercuts the route because the ball is late and not accurately thrown. So why is Travis Kelce not open? Well, guys, one way to get the defense to stop having two guys next to Travis Kelce is to get out of the pocket. So in some ways, I would recognize and advise the coaching staff to say, hey, more play action, some rollouts, some moving of the pocket to get him not to be necessarily stagnant. But also, hey, man, when the first read and second read ain't there, like, you're healthy. You got the legs. Make it happen. Like, let's get to, like, creative mode, creation mode, because we just saw that last night with Jaden Daniels. Like, Jaden Daniels doesn't like it? Okay. Well, we about to move out and figure out a way. And I just think Patrick, at least as of right now, his rhythm's off, and he is – probably too reliant on the check down because he sees the way the coverage plays out, which 9 times out of 10, that's fine. But you also need to challenge the defense more than he has done over the last 2 weeks.
Todd McShay was on with Ryan Russillo earlier today. He was talking about Travis Kelce. I bring that up because you just mentioned Kelsey's name a little bit. We know through 3 weeks, the production has not been there. I think we acknowledged last week that, you know, if one's not called back for a penalty, the stat line looks a little bit different.
Yep.
But this was another game. They highlighted it throughout the broadcast. Other than the first few snaps of the second half, there wasn't much of a concerted effort to give him the ball. So what's going on? Well, listen to Todd McShay's reasoning.
Are we not allowed to say that he's out of shape, that he's been partying all offseason? He's been jet-setting around with the most famous person probably in the entire world. The coverage and the respect he gets is the same. The athlete is not. Now, is he going to work himself into shape during the season? Yeah, I'm sure he will. He's an unbelievable competitor. He's one of the best to ever do it. But he's not the same guy right now. I'm not blaming it on Taylor Swift. I'm not blaming anything. All I'm saying is when you win 2 Super Bowls, you've got the whole tour that happens after the Super Bowl. There's no one else doing more commercials, I don't think, in the league. I mean, he and Mahomes are up there, but I think Kelce's doing more commercials and things. He's been at more events, doing more things socially. It's impossible to carry that schedule and still put in the same amount of time for football.
So that was Todd McShay, by the way.
Former
ESPNer. He's not actually with ESPN anymore. I said the commercial stuff always is ridiculous to me because they film it months ago, and yes. I don't believe that's really changing much of his offseason. I think if you and I were traveling as much as he did, it'd be a bigger problem because we're flying coach or,
You know, we're flying commercial.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm dragging my luggage through the airport, my flight's delayed, I'm tired and all that. He can sleep just fine on a private jet. Some of it has to be that he's getting older. I think that's fair.
Sure. But he's not out of shape.
He was at training camp on time, every practice.
On New Heights, he said he took a trainer with him to Germany.
Everywhere.
He took people with him on the road to train. I just,
Todd McShay, stick to the 2027 mock drafts.
Yeah, I just want to reference this because this was in my article about his actual summer, which is interestingly enough.
Oh, that's right. You wrote a whole story.
I wrote an entire story on it.
Nate, is Todd McShay correct?
No.
Did he give up on football?
No. This is what I wrote. This is just 2 sentences. A byproduct of Kelce's cram itinerary was changing his usual training routine. Wherever Kelce was, one of his 3 personal trainers, Alex Speckle, Andrew Sperling, and Justin Nee, was usually with him. Guys, he was training the entire offseason. And look, to your point, Alex, he participated in every practice during training camp, and he's been healthy. He's been accountable. He's been on the field more than actually I would advise at this point, this early in the season. Like, entering Sunday's game, he was on the field 91% of the Chiefs' overall offensive snaps through 2 games. So they have not actually executed their plan, which is what Andy Reid told us. It was like, no, actually, we need to, like, you know, scale him back. Now, part of that is no Hollywood Brown, and now that we don't have Pacheco, sorry, bud, you got to be on the field, man. And they have used him as a decoy, which is fine, and it worked.
It's worked a bunch.
It's worked effectively well against the Ravens, less so against the Bengals. And then, look, as my buddy Nate Tice has put on Twitter, and you can go check out his film work, they actually switched positions against the Falcons, which was really, really interesting. Hey, Rashee Rice, you're actually going to be running more Travis Kelce routes, and now Travis Kelce is going to be running a little bit more further downfield to open up more space against the Falcons' zone coverage.
And it worked.
So, yeah, how much is
it?
I mean, the Falcons run more zone than like anybody. Yes. How much is this just that Rice, very quickly, he's now mastered kind of what Travis has done, find the open spot, soft spot in the zone or whatever, and, and he's the most effective at that right now.
And, guys, they are criminally getting away with this at 3-0. I mean,
yeah, they're not playing great football.
They're not playing great football. But every time I look at the stats, I'm like, well, the offense was like pretty good. Now, I think the bigger criticism, the bigger concern is like their ineffectiveness in the red zone.
Sure.
Which I will probably write about at some point this week before they face a brittle Chargers team, unfortunately, based on their injuries. But, yeah, you look at any NFL stat.
You could have said that any year, by the way.
I know. But, but Jim Harbaugh had them boys playing, and then they all got hurt on Sunday. It wasn't.
The whole damn team. Honestly,
it wasn't pretty.
Yeah, Herbert's his fault, though. Other guys' injuries happen. He didn't have to put Herbert out there. He had back-to-back divisional games, including the Chiefs and the Broncos and one on the road. Yep. He didn't have to put him out there against the Steelers.
Not great.
That's on him.
So, look, obviously the most prolific team in the league right now is the Buffalo Bills. They're averaging 37 points a game. That's nuts. Again, it's only 3 weeks, but the Chiefs are top 10 offense right now.
Yep.
By most metrics.
Top two in the AFC.
Yep.
Points per game.
And points per game. So they're averaging 25 points a game. Now one of those is a, you know, scoop and score by the defense. So you take that, obviously. But they're still an above-average offense without Travis Kelce really needing to be relied upon. And then guess what, guys? They went into the locker room and they said, we could throw the ball to him a couple times. He could run it. You know what? He can run a legitimate route. You know, one that, like, tests the actual defensive back. Oh, look at that. He's wide open in man coverage. Wow, that's cool. So they need to use Kelce, I think, more in the red zone, which they have chosen not to do for obvious reasons, because why would we show that now when we can show that a lot later? And I think all these funky formations and having Leo Chenault line up as a fullback, I mean, I can't really curse, but it's just blank and giggles.
Yeah, I mean, Mahomes is motioning out to wide receiver. We were saying, like, you think any team really is paying attention to that? They won't even use a QB sneak. You think they're going to throw him the football in the red zone and leave him vulnerable?
Guys, it's blank and giggles, okay? That's they're having fun in September in a red zone game against a essentially meaningless Falcons team and getting away with it. Like, it's crazy to me. But at some point, the reason that makes Travis Kelce so great is Mahomes' elusiveness, his legs, his creativity. Get out of the pocket, man. And his best play of the season, that has actually been recorded in the box score, is when the Ravens actually pressured him. Patrick scrambles, and oh, guess what? There's Travis Kelce wide open for like a 20-plus yard gain. But we haven't seen that a ton unless it's desperation mode, i.e. against the Cincinnati Bengals in the fourth quarter, or, hey, I'm really trying to work on Rashee Rice. The coach staff is obviously trying to get Xavier Worthy up to speed as much as they can. So, like, in a weird way, Kelsey's gone from, like, the guy to, like, decoy and, like, save him for later.
And honestly, but again, like, if you go back through, I can point out at least three routes against Atlanta.
Yep.
That Travis Kelce takes everyone with him before Rashee Rice makes the catch.
Yep.
Like, at least three. I mean, it might be more than that, but I can think of three off the top of my head where Rashee is standing by himself because of Travis Kelce. And so, like, I don't know. I guess I've never been that Travis Kelce's watch. I certainly don't think
I just can't believe
right
that they
that,
said he was out of shape. What is Tom Rashee doing?
Also, like, this is like, I'm not making it about her, but you are. Like,
are we not allowed to say that he's out of shape?
Out
that
of
he's
shape?
Been partying all offseason?
Because he's been partying
all offseason.
He's
been jet setting around with the most famous person probably in the entire world. The coverage and the respect he gets is the same. The athlete is not.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Not
mixed. That's crazy talk.
Nate Taylor from The Athletic joining us in studio. Let's talk about the backfield for a bit. We know you mentioned Pacheco, and it could be, you know, 7+ weeks or whatever from now before maybe he's available. Kareem Hunt, practice squad, was not active. We'll see. He still technically hadn't been with the team for a week even as of today.
Yeah.
So let's assume whether it's this week or next, Kareem Hunt is available. How do you think this split is going to go? Because Carson Steele got 17 carries, was very effective in the game.
Yep.
Samaje Perine, 6 carries, was fine. We were talking earlier, we think when Kareem Hunt is available, the six, let's just call it six carries for P. Ryan, go to Kareem Hunt. Carson Steele is probably never getting more than 17 carries in a game. And then you mix in P. Ryan if he's still active in some passing game.
Perfectly said. I completely agree. I think there'll be still a running back by committee until proven otherwise. So now you could say,
but that was a heavy committee, 65-35 in favor of Carson.
Yes. And, but that was the plan anyway, because Carson's the rookie with the young legs, and this experience will better serve him down the road, even though you might not give him the same workload with Kareem Hunt in the mix. So if everything goes well this week, the expectation is that Kareem Hunt will be in uniform against the Los Angeles Chargers. I don't know if it'll be a 50-50 split in terms of carries, but, like, you know, that'll be the norm. So you could say, hey, Carson Steele will probably still start, but Kareem Hunt will get, you know, I don't know, 7 to 8, maybe 10 touches based on how the game script goes. Splitting that time with Carson Steele, who will be, I think, still the more traditional short yardage option until Kareem Hunt gets even more into the mix, because they're going to give him a limited amount of, you know, personnel grouping, plays, packages of the like. And then, yeah, and then you still have P. Ryan, who could be your third down back, your essentially your sixth offensive lineman if you are trying to get the ball downfield more with Patrick Mahomes. Based on what you hope is an improved play from Wanya Morris, who wasn't terrible against the Falcons, but he was serviceable, and now you hope with more play, with more rhythm, with more time with Joe Tooney, he can actually play better so that you may have more just overall better protection and Patrick won't have to necessarily speed himself up. But yeah, I'm excited to see how Kareem Hunt looks, because they're going to hand him the ball with probably gap scheme type runs. I don't know if they're going to do a lot of zone stretch type work just yet. But yeah, he can obviously catch the ball out of the backfield. You can run a couple screens for him as well. But all the credit to Carson Steele for stabilizing the running attack just well enough to keep the Atlanta Falcons honest, to punish them when they obviously had a lot of deep, you know, defensive backs, 10, 15 yards off the ball. And now you have him go back to a more traditional role for a rookie, with Kareem Hunt being able to be that 1-2 punch again.
For, and this is probably, I guess, quickly, but Justin Reed and Nick Bolton, do you think we could have just chalked up their early season struggles to they didn't have a training camp at all? They were coming off of injuries. Eyes are slow. Bodies are slow. I mean, look, Nick Bolton had his best game of the season.
Yes.
Justin Reed still got burnt by a tight end on one.
Yeah,
but
not
it's
great.
Like, but, you know, will he come back around once, you know, his legs are under him?
I'm not worried about Justin Reed just because from a schematic standpoint, he's a veteran enough to understand what he's going to be asked to do. Again, if the offense is getting away with all these giggle-type formation and plays, the defense is kind of getting away with it too. They haven't been super game plan specific yet. I think they've been pretty traditional for the most part, which is why they got burnt on that touchdown, because
it was tried to signal switch. Nobody switched.
Yes. It was like, oh, you guys, no one's actually put you guys in the situation yet. I'm not worried about Justin Reed as a ton, because I think he'll get better as the season goes along. That's actually traditionally how he's played throughout his career.
The entire Chiefs defense, it's gone with him.
Yes. And so I do think you can chalk it up to not having training camp, most of training camp, obviously not having the preseason. But it is fascinating that the one hole on the Chiefs defense right now, outside of like the occasional dips in consistent pressure, is every tight end that plays against the Chiefs looks like a Pro Bowler.
They did a good job, except for that 150-yard catch from
two catches for 59.
But it still happened.
59.
You know, we went through all this offseason training camp talk about the cornerback two
position. Bijan held, you know? Thanks.
Yeah.
I know, I'm just trying to give an excuse.
Perfect. But yeah, I mean, you know, we went through all this talk about, like, man, who's going to be the cornerback two without L'Jarius Sneed? And, you know, it's actually not the second wide receiver that has most hurt the Chiefs. It's actually been the tight end.
So, I underestimated Willie Gay's absence, I'll admit.
Yes, yes. Andrew Tranquil has had a little bit of a slip in his coverage production this year compared to what he did last year. He's actually gotten a lot better as a run defender, which I didn't necessarily see coming. But when Rizzi joined the team, you know, Drew Trank was supposed to be like, hey, covers linebacker. And he has also missed some tackles in the open field as well.
We got Nate Taylor from The Athletic in studio with us. We'll have a couple more minutes with Nate. And then J.J. Piccolo, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, joined us earlier. He talked about the importance of tonight and the next six games. I did want to ask you, Nate, about left tackle. Last week you were in studio, or at least on the phone with us. We were talking about Kingsley Wanye, who's going to start. Ultimately, we know Wanye got the nod. They didn't really rotate in. No, they brought in Kingsley for like a third and short. They didn't rotate. Yes. No,
Wanye that was such an handy lie.
Wanye Morris was the starting and is the starting left tackle for this football team.
Yep.
We had the question earlier. I don't know if you agree. Do you think, based on how Andy normally operates with, you know, basically taking someone's job from them, that they don't do it as quick as they did with Kingsley if they were not going for a three-peat? Or is left tackle just that important they're not messing around?
I'll be honest. I'm shocked that they made the switch as quickly as they did. So I am led to usually give Andy the benefit of the doubt in this, which would lead my answer to be I don't see them making this move if they weren't going for a three-peat. Now, it's so interesting that because they are going for a three-peat that they put an incentive on acquiring a left tackle in the draft, which is so fascinating. So, like, they were motivated because of the three-peat, because of their excellence, to go get a dynamic receiver and a left tackle. Those were their two biggest objectives during the draft, and they succeeded in doing that in the first two rounds. So you give them a ton of credit for being able to maneuver in order to do that. But normally Andy Reid does not do this. So I don't know if Kingsley's going to get a chance to re-earn his spot or if it's going to require an injury to Wanye Morris for that change to happen again. But I am surprised, and it might be because of what is in front of them that they have made this change, which is out of Andy Reid's normal operating procedure.
Can you develop Kingsley Suamataia in season if he's not getting actual reps, though? It's just a wash year, and then we're back to developing in camp next year?
You can develop technique.
Maybe his biggest problem.
Yes. I think you can develop technique and habits and correct those habits that were obviously not polished against Trey Hendrickson and the Cincinnati Bengals. But to your point, you talk to Jeff Schwartz, Mitchell Schwartz, Jeff Allen, they'll all tell you can't get better unless you actually play. There's just no way to simulate it in practice, even in a training camp-like setting, because, okay, you might get the occasional one-on-one rep against Chris Jones, but that's not for a 60-snap game, you know, where there's actually, you know, stakes on the line and you're not just going through a normal practice. So you can work on technique, you can polish that, you can build better habits about preparing and training and getting yourself to be in the best possible shape to go against that elite freak of a human being that is a outside pass rusher. But the only way you get better at it, I think, is to play the games. So it's unfortunate that this has happened to Kingsley before the calendar turned to October.
Yeah, that's crazy. Now, does that mean at this point Kingsley, let's say Juwan Taylor had something injury-wise, Kingsley the right tackle? Who else would it be?
Don't say that out loud.
Okay. Or would they move Wanye to right?
Don't say that out loud.
Just saying.
I mean, technically that job is supposed to be Lucas Niang's, who's on the practice squad.
Okay.
Ethan Driscoll, if you want to get real freaky.
Kingsley played right tackle in college, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true, but he has the athleticism of a left tackle, and you wouldn't.
Okay.
This is like the starter in the bullpen conversation every time with left tackles that aren't working. What about right? And then once you get done with right, you're like, probably be a pretty good guard.
I'm only saying if Juwan gets hurt. Juwan's fine. He's been playing fine.
He's been playing really well. A lot better than the start of last year. But honestly, if you're looking for the five best guys, which is what every offensive line coach will tell you, Andy Reid will say, we're just looking for the five best guys. If Juwan Taylor were to have some injury, you would move Wanye Morris to right and you'd put Kingsley at left.
Okay.
Mostly because Kingsley has only worked at left tackle, whereas last year they actually started to prepare Wanya Morris midway through the season, based on my understanding, about being available for both. And then, of course, Donovan Smith had the neck injury, and that thrusted him into being a starter for, what, four games late in December before Donovan Smith came back for the postseason run. So in training camp, if that matters, which I think it does, Wanya Morris was the tackle who was actually practicing at both spots at various occasions, whereas Kingsley was always the left tackle.
Nate, appreciate it, man. Good to have you in studio again.